going to talk about webcams, but believe it or not, the webcam market is heating up for a lot of reasons. Some of it is, the Facebook Live and the Twitter, where you can live stream. Some of it is just because there's an awful lot of streamers out there who do product reviews, either live or recorded. And then there's just the whole video conferencing aspect to life these days. The world got smaller, and so we no longer want to settle for just voice communication. We want the full featured. Video conferencing has been around for a while, and professional equipment is very good. There's all kinds of companies out there selling video conferencing equipment, but sometimes you just want to have something that's a little bit more affordable. And so you can do video conferencing with just a regular webcam and speaker, but the quality of that conference is not always that great for a variety of reasons. And so there's some new players out there in the consumer webcam market that can make that that video conferencing a little bit more affordable, easier to do. And then there's some other aspects of webcams that brought us some new products. So I'm going to talk about a few today and look at some of their different capabilities. One of the big reasons why I think that the webcam market has changed a bit is because of video technology itself. We've gone from, if you think about TVs, we went from just regular old analog to digital, and then, we have the whole 780p, 1080p, and now we've got the 4K Ultra. Well, naturally, if you want to record a video using a webcam, you want to record in 4K. And so Logitech has now got a webcam that supports that. And Logitech, for quite some time now, has been the go-to company for webcams. And in fact, their C920 has been recognized the last few years as one of the best webcams out there. It's since been replaced by a couple of new players. The C920, for if you ask people that use webcams, they'll still tell you the C920 is hands down the best, and it's very affordable. You can pick it up for about $60-$70, depending on if it's on sale or not. But what if you want to do something really, really special, or you have a more special need? And that's kind of what got me into looking at this whole thing, in that I wanted a wide-angle webcam. So I started looking at what was out there, and I hadn't looked at webcams in a couple years, so I was kind of surprised at what's out there. So the first one I want to talk about is that aforementioned 4K Ultra. It's the Logitech Brio, or if you go to their website, they just have it listed as the Logitech Pro 4K Ultra. When it first came out, I think they were touting it as the Brio. It's a little bit unique in that, as I mentioned before, it does 4K HDR, and it has a variety of wide-angle purposes. So what does wide-angle do for you? Most webcams do about a 65-degree. The standard webcam, like on your laptop, you can get a 65-degree angle, which means really you're limited to just kind of capturing your face and a little bit around you, depending on how much you zoom in. The Logitech Brio, or the 4K Ultra, has three different angles. You can do 90 degrees, 78 degrees, or 65 degrees. 90 degrees gets you a whole lot. The other thing that 90 degrees gets kind of important for you is if you want to take advantage of the webcam and use it for a security camera. There are security cameras out there that are specifically made for that, but Logitech also supports using your webcam as a security camera and can be motion activated. And so if you are looking at doing some kind of a security camera, you want that wider angle so that you can catch a little bit more. Now, obviously, if you're setting up a security camera system, you want multiple security cameras because you need to, you know, watch your whole house or whatever area you're doing. But if you're just, you know, looking for some kind of motion sensing and you've got a webcam and you want that, you know, dual purposing, there you go. The Logitech Brio sells for a whopping $199, which is, you know, getting pretty pricey up there. But if you're a streamer and you want the best video, and a lot of people are watching YouTubes on their 4K smart TVs, and so it kind of makes sense. Now, do keep in mind, if you're going to record at those higher levels, the 4K versus, you know, or the 1080, your video itself is going to get rather large, because the higher the quality, the bigger the file. And I'm not sure, to be honest, I haven't really looked any deeper in that. I'm not sure if YouTube even supports 4K, you know, 4K files, but it would be interesting to see. I was not willing to spring for $199 for 4K. I don't need that. So I didn't even look any deeper into that. But if $199 is a little steep and you don't need 4K, but you want a wide angle, look at the Logitech Pro Ultra, which also offers the 90 degrees with a 4x digital zoom. All of these are digital zoom versus an actual zoom. And the difference is, and anybody that uses a regular camera knows this, a digital zoom uses the uses more software oriented to do that. And then an actual zoom has a lens that moves in and out to do that zoom. Camera photographers will tell you anytime that a real zoom is much better than a digital zoom. A digital zoom can only go so far, but a 4K, and that's where you get that that difference in that, you know, angle, as well as being able to see every blemish on your face the more you zoom. So the next webcam that we're going to take a look at, also from Logitech, is the new, and these are new ones, okay? Not new, I mean, they've been out for a little while, but new to me and my looking at webcams, is the C922. And let me back up just half a second. The webcam that I had been using for the longest time is the C920, and again, I can tell you it's a very good webcam for most people's purposes. But why I started looking at webcams is I wanted something that had that wide angle ability. And so that's what started this whole, let's look and see what's new in webcams. So getting back to the C922, it's the Logitech C922 ProStream. It doesn't have the 90 degree wide angle, but it does do a 78 degree wide angle, which is pretty good. It also does something, again, for the streamers, in that it does background replacement. And what this means is, think about that green screen effect, you know, like the weathermen do on TV, where they stand in front of a literal green screen, and then the background of the weather maps and everything. People may not realize this, but, you know, they're just pointing at the green screen, and then there's the overlay of the weather maps. And it's always interesting to see green screen bloopers, where somebody's pointing one place and what they're actually wanting to do is wanting to point at it might be down below, and takes an awful lot of talent. So, but anyway, background replacement. So the Logitech C92 will do that, made again for those streamers that are capturing a video game, or, you know, something along those lines, but they want to superimpose their face onto that. So that's what the green screen background replacement does, is it will literally, using software, just capture a person's face. And that one sells for $100. And then the last webcam that I want to talk about, and I had mentioned the Intel RealSense before in a previous show. The Intel RealSense is a 3D camera, so it literally does 3D scanning. and will capture whatever it's looking at in three dimensions. And this is not a Logitech one, by the way. This is from another company. It's the first product, hardware product, that has come out using not embedded into a computer like a laptop. I have a laptop that has the RealSense camera in it, but this is a separate camera. It's called the Razer, R-A-Z-E-R, Stargazer, and it will do 3D scanning. It does dynamic background removal, so it's kind of built in, where the Logitech C922 is using a separate software application to do its background replacement. The Razer Stargazer has it built in. The Razer Stargazer will also do face and gesture recognition. Think Windows Hello, and I'll talk about Windows Hello in a second. But the face or gesture recognition, that's where we're starting to get into that whole virtual reality kind of technology, where instead of using a game controller, now we can use our hands to implement whatever it might be. Think of pointing in air to do something. I could literally see, you know, at some point off in the future, using your fingers to type in the air for a keyboard. Boy, wouldn't that be interesting to do? And that one sells for a whopping $150. Now, I will tell you, on the reviews for the Razer Stargazer, they've been mixed. The dynamic background removal is pretty good. You know, that seems to work pretty well in high light situations. Low light, the C922 gets better reviews than the Razer Stargazer. And while the Razer Stargazer sells for $150, a quick Google search for it will find all kinds of open box items. So there have been, you know, some returns. So obviously there were people that weren't real happy with it. New technology, you know, it's always going to, you know, have some shakeout time. And again, this is that first standalone device that has come out with that Intel RealSense embedded in it. But it's, you know, definitely kind of an interesting thing. And the 3D scanning portion of it, I can see, again, those people that are making product review types of videos. That would be an interesting thing, because instead of seeing something in a 2D, you literally could demo a product with that 3D scanning. I'm not going to run out and purchase one right away to play with it, but it definitely is something, you know, worth looking at. And again, depending on your needs and what you're using them for, and, you know, so we've got, you know, all the way from a 4K webcam, wide angle, 3D scanning. So definitely interesting webcams out there these days. So getting back to that Windows Hello, where that face recognition comes into play. So Windows Hello is a new security implementation. Rather than typing in a password or using a thumbprint, Windows Hello uses face recognition. So you know, especially like in a laptop time type of a scenario, open your laptop, turn it on, and then in order to get into your computer, your 3D camera, your RealSense 3D camera would scan your face and use face recognition to verify, yes, this is the person who can log on to this computer. And so the Razer Stargazer, being a standalone 3D camera, and it looks pretty cool, you know, as opposed to, you know, most of the 3D cameras that are kind of squarish. This one's got a little roundish looking type of a thing. So if you have a regular desktop camera and you want to use that Windows Hello face recognition. The Razer Stargazer is something to look at along with all of the other aspects. And again, in a high light, bright room situation, the dynamic background removal for the Razer Stargazer definitely got better reviews than the Logitech C922's background replacement. But with both of them, one other caveat that you want to consider is that they both want a good, strong processor, because the background removal is a processor intensive type of action. And in fact, the Razer Stargazer recommends a 4-core Intel processor or better in order to implement that. And its background removal was a little bit better than the C922. And with that background removal, what we're talking about is being able to get a good copy of the face with the hair, and, you know, moving your head, side views, things like that. The Razer Stargazer just did a little bit better job than the C922, you know, for that kind of a thing. Otherwise, for green screen effects, the other way, the C920, the go-to webcam, will do it, but then you want a real live, honest-to-goodness green screen, physical green screen. The background replacement or green screen effect that the Razer Stargazer and the C922 do, you don't have to have a physical green screen behind you, but you can always, you know, buy a green screen, and then you can use any of those if that's something that you want. So webcams. The last thing that I want to talk about today is another one of those kind of technologies that I was playing with here. I have an extensive CD collection, and I decided recently that I wanted to put all of my music onto network storage so that I can access it from, you know, multiple devices that connect to my network, not just MP3 player for downloading the music, but I can stream it to my stereo, et cetera, et cetera. And so I mentioned to a friend of mine that I was going to do this, and she asked, well, are you going lossy or lossless? And I thought, boy, that's a good question. I hadn't really considered it. Up till that point, anytime I copied a CD to my computer, anytime I ripped a CD, I just always used an MP3 format because I wanted, you know, because the purpose of putting it there was, again, to later put that music onto an MP3 player or a USB stick to, you know, play on a computer at work or whatnot. So I'd always just used an MP3 and hadn't really thought about lossy versus lossless. But the idea was that I was going to rip all of my music and then get rid of the physical CDs themselves. And so it's definitely something to consider. So what is lossy versus lossless? A lossless format makes an exact copy of the music that is on your CD bit for bit. Lossy takes some of the bits out of the music. So what does it take out? Using software algorithms, the software analyzes the music and takes out what it determines to be sounds that wouldn't be heard. So think of highest frequencies, silences, things like that. And why lossy versus lossless? Lossy came about, number one, because it made a smaller file. So a lossy file is essentially a smaller file unless some type of a compression ratio is being used. And that was because way back when we first started ripping CDs to our computers, storage was still at a premium. We didn't have inexpensive 1, 2, 3 terabyte hard drives. The other reason for lossy, because it makes a smaller file, it makes it quicker to download. Again, we didn't have high-speed internet back in those days. Some of us were still using dial-up, and so if we downloaded music off of the internet, we wanted that file as small as possible, and that's where lossy comes about. where you can really actually see a difference is in images, digital images, because we can actually see the image, so it's easier to picture this concept of lossy versus lossless. And even digital images have lossy formats, and there, because images are based off of pixels, little squares of color to form an image, a lossy image format looks at the image and sees where there might be a, you know, big area that's one single color, you know, black, pink, whatever it might be, and looks at how many pixels there are in that area. And maybe you've got a square inch that's all pink, and in that square inch it's made up of 10,000 pixels. Each of those pixels is taking up disk space. And so rather than having 10,000 pixels, we might take some of those pixels out of there and then increase the size of the remaining pixels so that the one inch square still looks pink. But where you can see that it's a lossy format in a picture is if you make that picture bigger, it gets pixelated, meaning you can start seeing those little tiny pixels, and now you see a bunch of, you know, squares in that pink area. So that's a lossy format, where the lossy keeps everything intact, but again, makes a bigger file size. Music, where we can tell the difference, is in hearing, not in seeing. Now, lossy versus lossless, there's some who argue that most people can't hear the difference. Where you can hear the difference is, one, if you've got good hearing or good ears, and two, if you're listening to your music on a good high-end stereo. I think where you really hear the difference between a lossy and a lossless is when you've got instrumental music, such as classical or jazz. There you can really tell the difference because, again, it's taking those high frequencies or those low frequencies out, or silences. And sometimes, and that's where audiophiles will say that lossy formats take the warmth out of the music. But real audiophiles will also say that digital music did it, because if you think about vinyl, which is analog, versus digital CDs, if you look at an analog sound wave, it's curves, and a digital sound wave is squares. And so when we digitize music, and this is where back in the day you would see oversampled, you know, oversampled 12 times, and that meant that whatever device, computer device technology they were using to take that vinyl analog music and change it into digital, it played it over and over and over that many times, trying to get as much of the true representation, as much of the true frequencies as possible. But digital, you're still going to lose something. And if you listen to vinyl and then listen to that same recording that's in a digital format, those, again, that are audiophiles, have good hearing, know what to look for in the music, they can tell the difference. Most of us can't tell the difference between a vinyl or a CD. Some will argue that the CD even sounds better because it's crisper. Vinyl can get damaged and, you know, lose something, but a good turntable, a good sound system, and a good vinyl, nothing can beat it when it comes to music. So getting back to lossy versus lossless, with today's computers, storage not being a premium, you might as well, if you're ripping your CDs, you might as well rip it in that lossless format, because the key here is if you rip it in a lossy and then you get rid of the original, what's gone you can never get back. Whereas if you rip it in a lossless, and then later you want to take that music and put it on an MP3 player, or you want an MP3 for whatever reason, it's the most common format for most devices. You can always take your lossless digital form and make it into a lossy, but you still have that original digital copy there preserved in that lossless format. But if you have it in a lossy, you can't go back. You can't recreate it. The other big difference, you know, besides the downloading speeds now, so storage is cheap. We also have better computers. Obviously, when you're ripping something in a lossless format, it's going to take a little bit more time. But now with CD readers and writers being much faster, and the processing capabilities of newer computers, because a lot of that ripping takes place with a processor as well. Yes, your CD reader has to read the file into the computer's memory, but then changing it into that different format, because the music on a CD is one format, we got to change it into another file format now for that lossy or that, you know, lossless. That changing over takes place on the computer, and that's where the processor comes into play. And so, you know, better processors these days can do it much quicker. So from a time aspect, you know, ripping a lossy versus a lossless doesn't increase the time that much. As far as hearing it, that's something that you might want to do. I did it myself. I ripped music in a lossy format, and I ripped it in a lossless, played it on my stereo, and because I'm half tone deaf anyway, older and whatnot, I really couldn't tell a whole heck of a lot of difference. So, you know, that's something for you to consider. And the other way to save space is to rip it in a compressed form, but understand with that compressed, when you play back, it has to be uncompressed before you can play it. And so you have to look at the capability of the device that ultimately you're going to play it back on. I use Windows Media Player for doing all of my ripping, and there's other software applications out there that you know, people will use, but I like Windows Media Player. It's simple. For the most part, it works fine. And Windows Media Player has the ability to rip music in different formats as well as audio qualities. And regardless of the format that you use, make sure that you use the highest audio quality or bit rate, because that will truly make a difference. If you rip something in an MP3, which is the lossy format, and you use a lower bit rate, again, it's that file size. That's where it's going to make a difference, but it's also that audio quality. I can definitely tell the difference. My tone-deaf ears can tell the difference between a lower bit rate versus a higher bit rate in that MP3. But again, I couldn't tell the difference in the lossy versus the lossless. Lossless formats, you're looking at ALEC, which is iTunes format, and the file extension there is a .m4a, or Windows Media Audio, which could be lossy or lossless, either one. MP3s are always going to be lossy. And again, that means that some of the original audio has been removed to make that file a little smaller and more playable on most devices. Check your device. Older devices, they'll only play MP3s, or your car stereo may only play an MP3. Most of the newer devices will play all of those formats, because people want to connect up their iPods, or, you know, they want to put music on, you know, a USB flash drive or whatever it is. So most of the newer devices will handle any of those, lossy or lossless. And again, if most of your music is instrumental, then definitely consider doing the lossless format. So that's the show for today. And thanks again for listening. And we'll talk to you next month. Take care, everybody.
You've been listening to Technology Matters with hosts Christine Lazzaro and Dave Snedeker.
Jazz, swing, blues, bop, and more from WGTD is available 24 hours a day on your desktop or laptop, smartphone or radio. To access 24/7 Jazz WGTD on your computer, go to WGTD.org. On your smartphone, download the free WGTD app. In the Kenosha Racine area, 24/7 Jazz HD2 is available via HD radio. And in the Waukegan and Pleasant Prairie areas, the service is being broadcast temporarily over analog radio at 103.3 FM. For more information, call 262-564-3030.